Welcome to Revere Assets, Your Money with Danny Stewart.
You never know how far the stock is going to go down.
Tim Razor.
Danny knows I'm a geek for all of this stuff.
And Don Vandenborg.
Telling it like it is.
If you're seeking the best stock knowledge this side of Wall Street, you've come to the right place.
I'm sorry, did I steal your stuff?
No, you didn't steal any thunder. Who's handling this segment?
For the next hour, Danny, Tim, and Don will be talking investing.
Investing is 90% psychological, and I love that.
Trades.
The market will usually overshoot to the downside and to the upside.
And dumpster fires.
Because it doesn't matter what you think or what I think, and it matters even less what Danny thinks.
And now, here's your hosts, Danny, Tim, and Don.
/60/40 is broken, folks. 60/40 is broken. I want to talk about that. I want to talk about. I want to go to infinity. Infinity is what I'm trying to say. I want to go to infinity and beyond with you. I want to talk about that. I want to talk a lot of things. I want to talk about with you, stock nerds and market lovers. But before I do so, we want to make fun of Danny. But I don't want to ruin the surprise in case Kenny gets it weaved into the show. So I will leave it as a tease. And I hate to do that to you, but because I do love you, stock nerds and market lovers. But what Danny just did before the show, I know was on tape. And Kenny somehow, in his mystical, magical powers, will weave it into the show at some point, and you will laugh along with us, stock nerds, at what Danny just did. So. Pay attention.
I can summarize it very quickly without giving it away.
Go ahead.
Danny's brain most often runs faster than his mouth does. This was the rare occasion where his mouth ran faster than his brain.
Yeah, usually my brain is ahead. Ahead.
We're all living in 2020. Danny's in 2160. That's the problem. So Danny is the future. And so, boy, that sounds like a
future. I can see far out.
Danny is the future. Stock nerds and market lovers, before we begin, let me get the admin stuff out of the way here. 855 Real Wealth, you can call anytime, day or night. And that is no joke. We never have salespeople answer the phone because we have no salespeople. We don't need them. It's all word of mouth, all referral. We're all one family here at Revere. So listen to me. If you're thinking about coming on board, if you're like, you know what, I was thinking about it last year, I've been listening to you guys, that Don, what a handsome guy, living in Jacksonville under the veil of Nick Foles. Let me tell you something. let me tell you something. Who's your coach, Don? Did you guys retain the bologna sandwich eater?
Yes, he's still there. And the worst part last year was the defense, so naturally we kept our defensive coordinator and got rid of the offensive coordinator.
You should have never gotten rid of the leather jacket, Jack Del Rio.
That's wrong.
Oh, that's a wrong statement.
It was time for him to go.
Is Jack Del Rio the Jeff Fisher?
He started mailing it in after his contract extension.
Well, he's like the Jeff Fisher of the NFL. Jeff Fisher just 8-8. If you want your team to have hope in the beginning and have them saying, well, we looked good towards the end. You hire Jeff Fisher, right? And then in turn, you hire Jack Del Rio.
Honestly, Jack didn't get much help from the front office. We've been miserable at drafting until the last couple drafts.
Well, was Jack really Del Rio the under, is it Khan? Sadiq Khan? Is he under that ownership, or was that a different group?
That might not be fair. I think he crossed over for a little while.
There you go. Well, I digress. So anyway, stock nerds and market lovers. Don Vandenborg, the handsome person we were just talking to, the portfolio extraordinaire, does classes about every other week on the stock market and things that actually help or make you save money. By the way, if you want that link to all of Don's anthology of classes on YouTube, just email Dan at Revere Asset, Don at Revere Asset. You can email me, Tim at Revere Asset. We'll send it to you. Don's class on how to avoid the bear. And a lot of you might, it's counterintuitive, the nature of Don's class scheduling there, sequencing. And I tell you, it's not. When things look their best is when it's not that you should be Gargamel with looking for dark clouds. It's that you need to be able to spot the signs, because if you can spot the signs that Don taught you in the class, well, then let me tell you, my friends, you avoid a world of pain. And it's free. The class is free. So just I encourage you to listen to it. whenever you are working out, whenever you're going for a run in your car, even though it's playing on YouTube, you
going for a run in your car.
Yeah, like the Flintstones. Like the Flintstones. Like the Flintstones. So, but I...
Rabba-dabba-doo.
There you go. And so I want you to enjoy that wherever and whenever you can, because I'll tell you, you'll want to listen to it a couple times.
The time to avoid a 20% drawdown is not when you have the 20% drawdown. The time is to plan before it happens.
And Don's going to help you avoid all that. And so that's not hyperbole. That's truth. We speak truth here. And so... Speaking of truth, let's see. Questions 855 Real Wealth, 1 Danny Stored is how they can get a hold of you on Twitter at D Vandenborde, at TJ REAZOR. TJ Razor is my handle on Twitter. Feel free to let me know you followed me. I can follow you back so you can direct message me. I like doing that, I don't mind that at all. And a little plug here, a little plug. Look, if you are like, hey, I want to get more content. I'm going to put Danny on the spot here. I want you to go follow. Well, I'll discuss this right now. I usually don't tell Danny or Don what I'm going to discuss because I don't.
Want to scare us?
I just don't want. I don't want the pushback. I don't need it because I'm going to. I'm a master at weaving in content to achieve an objective. But Danny has been a little active on LinkedIn here lately, and you can follow Danny on LinkedIn. LinkedIn is not just business to business. It's not job recruiting. LinkedIn is content. And if you're like, Tim, I don't do Twitter because of the nonsensical political nature of it, and quite frankly, I don't enjoy business Facebook, but I'll tell you what, LinkedIn has turned out to be a fantastic place for wonderful idea exchange and content, and I'm a huge proponent of LinkedIn. I've been using LinkedIn to write myself. And I think if you follow Danny or just connect with him, it's not a follow, it's a connection. If you connect with Danny, I don't think you'll be disappointed at what Danny's doing and what Danny's going to be doing on that platform. So with that, I do want to... So John Stumpf got fined, the CEO.
Ooh, big time.
Yeah, and this isn't... Listen, where I start is not the destination I'm heading to, okay? It's just a starting point here. So just work with me. Because I've often lamented that these people aren't held accountable. And some of you have heard me say, send them to jail, and it'll make all the difference in the world.
Yeah, perp walk, yeah.
Yeah. John Stumpf got, and, you know, it becomes silly money when they start, Donnie, you doing some clay pottery?
No, my wife is, though.
She's spinning. Are you guys like Ghost right now? Patrick Swayze and, who was with Patrick Swayze?
Demi Moore.
Demi Moore.
Whoopi Goldberg.
Demi Moore was in that movie?
She was the wife.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Yeah, she was.
And then Whoopi Goldberg was the medium.
I only know Whoopi Goldberg from Sister Act.
Sister Act.
Sister Act 1,
and
2,
Sister
and 3.
Act, yeah, they kept, you know, almost turned into a Rocky, but, you know, Rocky.
Oh, I thought
4,
you meant,
5, 6.
I thought
the
you
moon.
Meant the nuns were fighting at some
no,
point.
No, I just meant it almost turned into like a miniseries.
They were fighting the Russian nuns. So look, they fined John Stumpf, then they've barred him from running.
Barred him for life.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm on the fence about this because some people will say, well, you know, what does it matter? He's still rich. And I think though, if you peel back the onion a little bit on people, it's not wealth that drives a lot of people. What it is accomplishment or
ego
or disgrace. And I think that did take a swipe. Now, still say put him in jail, but I also do have a common sense side to me here going, he might not have actually known what was going on right away. It was Kerry Tolstad that knew what was going on.
They needed a few more people at least in that.
They're roping Kerry Tolstad in. Kerry Tolstad, who is not going to go to prison. She's just forfeiting pay. They'll sort all that out in a few weeks. But she's the one who was... had direct reports doing this. It's not, and I don't even think it's so much of the act of opening the fake accounts or whatever the act is. It's when you find out the wrong deed, how do you handle it? And look, right. It says a lot about your character and how you handle it. You got to address it. And it's not easy. Like, let me not pretend that these are easy things to do. They might have thought they were handling it internally and they weren't. You know, like they weren't, you got to come out and you're a public company. It's not like you're a private company, right? And you can just hey, you're
disclosure.
Yeah, you're accountable to your customers or who you serve. Like, as a public company, you're accountable to the shareholders. And look, John Stump, you know, some of you, I'm not one of these people. You want them to, if you want them to die as a beggar, you want them to leave this earth as a beggar. You're not going to get that, and that, fine. And I don't think that should be. If you're that bitter towards something, I don't know if that should be. That's a hard place to be. Let me not. That's a hard place to be, that bitter driving at something, and so, and Kerry Tolstad's not going to do that. I've argued though for the longest time that if you just put people in prison, that this behavior would stop. And I'm changing that stance. I'm changing that stance because I don't think that's true anymore. And I say that because if you've seen, you know, fentanyl and opioids are a big, fentanyl is an opioid.
Right.
Don, you remember the INYS, the ticker? It was Insys Therapeutics. Yeah. Biotech, yeah. And so... John Kapoor, a former billionaire who founded opioid maker, I'm butchering the pronunciation. I think it's Insys, was sentenced to 5.5 years in prison for his role in a racketeering and conspiracy to illegally boost sales of his company's prescription fentanyl drug. And so they're going to put this guy in prison for 5.5 years. You can say it's a country club. It doesn't matter. It's still prison. It's still your freedoms are taken away. And so, oh, I'm sorry. I thought Don was calling. No, Don's on the phone already. It's my stock quotes that disappeared as I get distracted. They're going to put this guy in prison. But I'm thinking that the behavior is never going to change. That the nature of it's accomplishment that, like, John Stump probably, you know, when John Stumpf goes to parties, I mean, does he feel a little more, does he cower a little bit more because he's barred from the industry and got fined and everybody knows what
he get probably also gets invited to a lot less parties.
Yeah, probably, because he's a pariah. And so, but I don't think the nature of the behavior is ever going to change. John Stumpf found out about it. He should have fired Kerry Tolstad right away, come out and just got in front of it. By the way, they're going to get the Boeing CEO. Give it 2 years. Give it 18 months, and the Boeing CEO will be doing some kind of walk, whether it's a disgraceful walk or a perp. Like, well, Tim, what laws did he break? Look, just, you don't know.
Community service, yeah.
Yeah, something has gone on here that this Boeing thing is just going on. You start uncovering just peel back the layers a little bit more.
That'll make him an air traffic controller with all that stress. That's a stressful job. Make him get the feel of it.
And so, as a sentence?
Well, it kind of as a sentence, yeah. As no, a pen that, said, make him
fly the 737 Max without any of the training that these pilots actually needed. And so, and look, I was a pilot for a very good number of years in the Marine Corps, so I've got a little of experience with this. Maybe not flying the 737 Max, but I know that training matters. And if you're dealing with experienced or junior inexperienced pilots, you should probably train them more.
Yes.
And always err on the side of caution. And so when you don't do that, you're held account. And eventually he'll be held account for something. Who knows what? Like barred from running another aerospace company, like whatever. But my point being here is I just don't think the behavior changes because of the competitive nature of the landscape and the makeup of the individuals running these companies. The guy from Boeing could have disclosed all of this. They knew about these emails last fall, the ones that were making fun
of.
Yeah,
right.
Just
so you know, with the Wells Fargo thing, though, you know, I think some of that direction and some of that incentive came from pretty high up because it happened all over the country at multiple branches. You know, it's not like it happened at a few branches and then they found out about it and they covered it up. I mean, they set these policies that made it very conducive for that to happen, and they looked the other way.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they knew damn good and well what was going on.
But I guess the point being here is that I was just about to say, Stockners, don't leave me. I got a lot to say about a couple of things here that are going to make you money in the near future. I was just about to say, well, what would prison fix? Or someone out there is probably saying, what would prison fix? That leads to a whole nother discussion on our prison system that I really don't.
let's not go down that road.
Well, no, you could say that about, like, hey, what is prison actually supposed to be doing? Is it reforming?
Rehabilitating or incarcerating? Right?
Yeah. And that right there is a whole. That's like a lifetime. We could do a show a week about that.
And you mentioned Country Club. You really want to deter some of those white collar crimes? Just put them in mainstream prison.
Put them in Rikers.
Yeah.
You know,
that'll be a deterrent.
Yeah, and I believe so. But I don't think so. I don't think it is. And I'm not being facetious with you,
Stockers.
There's
always going to be greed.
I think that's what it is. I think it's the competitive nature. It's like, I'll take my own personal options trading. Like when I'm trying to, like stock nerds, what I do is I test out a tremendous amount of different strategies. I put myself in purposeful, stressful positions with
put yourself in harm's way.
Yeah. With the market. So I can just feel it. Like I said, what are you like? You're trying to feel alive, Tim? No. How do I come to you with different thoughts on the market if I'm not experiencing them myself? Mm-hmm. And so I instead of just buying shares, I'll do it with options, which adds a different layer of complexity to it, meaning mm-hmm. time. It's mm-hmm. not just value.
Gotta be right.
Yeah. And so, you know, and sometimes I make mistakes, and that's pretty much how I learn.
But to be clear, when you're testing out something and you're kind of experimenting, you do just one or two contracts until you've believed that it's viable and doable and you've done it for a while. You're not doing 10 contracts.
You want to feel alive. Put 100 contracts on something.
You want to feel alive but not dead, right? Yeah. Not creamed.
Oh, when you have 100 contracts on something, you just, for me...
Your basket case.
No, not really. I'm just... I find that that's where my mind grabs. 100 contracts is a big size for me. Mm-hmm. I find that my mind will want to know what's going on. Like I find myself, like that's what.
Yeah, tick by tick. It makes you.
Yeah, and it's not.
It makes you neurotic.
Yeah, it's neurotic. It's not enjoyable. Yeah. But I do.
It's nervous. Yeah.
I do experiment with that to just trust in the setup. The whole give yourself the gift of time. There's a lot of things I do to just. Help me keep an even keel on the market. Anyway, that's not where I wanted to go with this, but they are putting someone in prison here for he was bribing doctors. Right. The opioid guy. And so,
yes. And part of it was, it makes a good look. I hate to say this, but it makes a good story and tabloid for the government, for the prosecutors, you know, because I agree with it. People died here. I mean, people get hooked on that, they overdose, and they die.
Yeah, and especially if they know it. But here's where I'm getting to, stock nerds. And so we've got John Stumpf at one end, you know, just overseeing this calamity, okay? Then you've got...
big fraud, yeah.
Yeah, and then you've got the CEO of this... Like, actively involved in bribing doctors to get people hooked. Like, well, Tim...
I think some of the doctors should get in trouble, too.
Do you think, though, there's someone out there on the other end of the microphone going, well, isn't it the people's fault for getting hooked? And it's like, wait a minute. If you know the susceptibility, the ease of falling into...
If you're subscribed to by a doctor, you trust your doctor,
right?
And you think he's doing the right thing for you, and he's taking bribes, I mean, would you be a little more skeptical if he said, oh, by the way, I'm taking bribes for this, to push this on you? And those hybrid narcotics, those new narcotics, are so addictive...
Right, right.
...that people that have been, you know, very good, upstanding citizens for years, and then they get a back injury or something, and they're 50, and may be a teetotaler or hardly drink at all. All of a sudden, they take a few of those pills, and they're hooked.
Right.
So, you know, and I can empathize with that.
No, I absolutely can. And so, I mean, I just don't think the behavior is going to change. And so, I don't know what you do. But like John Stumpf is towards the end of his run, not the beginning. You know, like he clearly, you know.
Right, I got it.
And so.
Well, it all comes down to ethics and morals.
Yeah.
And education.
Ethics and morals before education.
Oh, yes. That's why I said it. Ethics and morals and education.
But that does lead me to like 60-40 is broken. And so like anyone.
Well, you brought that back nicely.
Well, yeah, because this is where I'm headed with this. And eventually I've got some things I want to say about some stocks I think that have the opportunity to move higher. 60-40 has been broken for a while. This isn't new. 60-40 has been broken for about, what, 10, since the Great Recession. 60-40 means 60, a portfolio made of 60% stocks, 40% bonds. And because
a balanced fund.
Well, yeah, but you're going to underperform, and it's such a big deal that we've talked about this, but there's a way I'm going to talk about this that has a different spin on it or a different angle. And so you need more stocks, and you need more stocks because we're living longer. You need more growth. You need more alpha. You need more beta.
Well, couple that with the fact that the Fed has taken interest rates to artificially low levels. You can't even get much yield.
Well, that's the
thing. Bonds are much more risky now with potential rising interest rates.
And you have to have so much different exposure to different bonds to get, you know, like people are loading up on bonds. The bond's the biggest market out there, if you don't know that.
Oh, yeah, much bigger.
Yeah. Yeah, and so you're loading up on bonds. And so I'm reading this week, and so like, oh God, I need bonds. I can see just run through me a decision-making tree with someone who's 50, 45 or 50, and they're getting ready for the next 15, 20 years towards what they would think is their retirement age from work. And I just want to run through this with you because let's just say they're to the wall with stocks, and they're like, you know what, I should start getting a little bit more high quality. They say the words high quality, maybe not defensive per se, but I should
less aggressive.
And everyone says stocks are more aggressive and bonds are less aggressive. And
depends on the time frame.
Oh, and it depends on what the federal market, the federal banks are doing, the central banks are doing with interest rates. And so I can see the decision making tree. Well, let me go to a service to find out which bonds, because when I say bonds, I'm not just talking government bonds, and maybe we're talking Tesla bonds, maybe we're talking, you know, Apple sells bonds all the time, you know, but you don't get much interest rate for them because Apple's the most stable company in the free world. And so you start going to lesser grade bonds, maybe like an A-, maybe like a B+, to get that interest juice that you want. And then you start going to like a rating service, and you're like, well, I trust Morningstar. They've been giving me ratings on mutual funds forever. And so when you see that Morningstar nears SEC deal on ratings, it gets my attention, because I know you stock nerds. I know your parents. I know your family members. I know how you're doing research. Maybe not you particularly listening to this direct podcast, but the people that are around you, they're not in it like you are. If you're listening to this podcast, there's a good chance that maybe you have some passive investing in your mix, but you're pretty active. And if you're not active with your investments, you're active mentally, and you're not just doing peripheral research. You're in the trenches trying to figure out things. And so a lot of people use Morningstar because they're just circling the wagons of research. Like, yeah, Morningstar gave it 5 stars. It should be good for me, right? You know, or hey, Vanguard is got this fund. It should be good, right? And as Don will tell you, you know, Vanguard is the cheapest way to lose half of your money in a
bear market.
In a bear market. And so Morningstar is nearing a settlement with federal regulators over allegations the firm violated rules in its bond rating business that prohibit analysts who hand out credit ratings from being involved in sales and marketing. And you're like, well, Tim, that doesn't sound so bad. So here, let's see.
The conflicts of interest?
Yeah, oh my gosh. Morningstar has made a big push into bond ratings, say it would improve quality and restore investor trust in the business. and it did none of that.
Is this from 2009-08, or is this another one?
January 15th, 2020.
Okay.
So Morningstar doubled down on the ratings business in July when it bought a ratings firm for almost $700. It bought a ratings firm for $700 million. I want you to think about this. These are people that, if you're like, well, Tim, what's a bond ratings firm? It's the equivalent of buying Siskel and Ebert for $700 million. Hey, do you give the debenture?
They analyze the safety, security, and coupon. And
yeah. You know. Do you like Forrest Gump? Thumbs up or thumbs down? Do you like Tesla debentures? Yes, thumbs up. And so, well, Tim, it's a little bit more involved than that. Is it? Is it? Is it really more involved than you just bought Siskel and Ebert for $700 million when you're manipulating the ratings? Morningstar.
Well, so they're supposed to be doing deep fundamental analysis and tell you how safe they are, but it kind of turns out that they might have been being a little more liberal, not just like the ethics with the right. Greed kicked in.
Yeah, yeah, it's exactly it. You see how we work that in there?
Oh, you know.
The potential settlement highlights a longstanding conflict of interest in the credit ratings industry. Think bonds. Bond ratings firms are hired by the entity selling the debt, meaning if Danny was Danny Inc. and Danny wanted to sell some bonds to raise some cash, Danny is shopping for the firm that's going to give him the rating.
Right.
Well, what do you think?
Well, there's a couple of them, Fitch's.
Yeah, yeah. So let me just read that again. Bond ratings firms are hired by the entity selling the debt, which benefit from favorable ratings. The ratings firms have an incentive to issue more favorable ratings to win business. Overly optimistic bond ratings were one case of the financial crisis when supposedly safe, highly rated securities lost significant value. And Morningstar, 10 years later, 11 years later, is caught doing this.
Same thing again.
Yeah. And so it goes back to the beginning of the discussion. This isn't just one person, although CEO Kunal Kapoor. Maybe he should go to prison. Maybe he oversaw it. Maybe he should be stumped. And so
maybe he should be stumped.
Yeah, he should be stumped. And so why? Like, why is this still going on? Tim, we've passed rules to protect investors, but what you can't ever pass is the behavior the intent of the people leading these firms. So, and it doesn't matter. Like, despite the rules, increased competition among ratings firms has made it easier for issuers to shop around for the best grades. Ratings shopping is alive and well in the U.S. securitization markets, notwithstanding the implementation of regulatory and legislative actions intended to curb the practice. A Morningstar credit analyst said Morningstar actually said this back in 2014. Anyway, let's see here. Did they get? After the purchase of DBRS, Morningstar CEO Kunal Kapoor said in a letter to shareholders that the firm aimed to improve the quality of ratings post-cray. It's all hogwash.
Can I give you a quick example
that'll
make it very clear?
Please.
So in where I live, just a little outside of Dallas, they have a big school system. They're trying to raise bond money. And someone found out that I kind of knew something about that and asked me to come to the meeting with the superintendent of the school district and whatever. And they had a guy from Southwest Securities with a suit and tie coming out giving advice. He's hired by the school to give advice about why these bonds are safe and secure and all this kind of stuff. Well, in Texas, you really only have three major players, a couple others, but three major players that either analyze the bonds or issue the bonds, right?
Right.
They're the underwriter broker. So, and they kind of, what they do is they take turns. So you get an advisor that's supposedly arm's length, that's not the company that's underwriting them. He's their competitor, and he analyzes them and tells them why it's such a good deal. And in other words, the school district wants to raise money. They want to get $100 million to build this huge football stadium or whatever it is. So they're trying to sell the taxpayers and the students, the parents. And so they get a company to issue the bonds and put in these bond covenants, whatever. And then they get the another company to come out and have their, quote, independent expert come out and say why they're good. And the problem is they're kind of all in bed together. So they rotated around. So one month Southwest Securities would be analyzing the bond saying it's okay, and the other company will issue the bonds. And then the next month or the next deal, Southwest would be the ones issuing the bonds, and the other company will be the one that's analyzing it. So it gives the appearance of being, there's not a lot of conflicts, but in fact, they all represent the seller or the purpose raising the money.
Right.
Just like in the brokerage business with stocks, the analysts go, oh, this is an upgrade. This is but it's really the companies are the clients. They're raising money by issuing bonds or issuing stocks, and they're the client. You think you're the client. You're the cattle. You're the cattle. He's the cowboy, and they're taking you to market.
So what happened? Did you set these people straight?
Oh, so he starts getting up there, and he starts going.
On his high horse?
Yeah, he gets up there, and he goes on his high horse.
I just wanted to keep the cattle up.
Yeah, yeah. So He gets up there and he goes, well, we've done thousands of iterations of all the different variables and what could happen. Well, he's talking about Monte Carlo simulation. Yeah. I know what he's talking about. And you know, this is a good deal, and there's no way these bonds are going to default. You know, or they're not, you know, they're very, very, very unlikely. So I thought, you know, so I kind of waited. Oh, and I tried to ask a question. So you could not challenge anybody. You had to submit questions in writing on paper. Well, you've seen my chicken scratch handwriting. It's not that good. So the guy pulls it, the superintendent's reading the question to the guy, and he couldn't quite read. And so I stood up, I said, and I started talking. He goes, oh, you can't talk. You can't. Officer, and literally, the policeman's in the back. I mean, this very tight.
Is this a heated meeting?
Yeah, because all the parents are all the parents are challenging.
Geez Louise, you're getting
So I said, no, sir, I'm trying to read. I'm reiterating the question so you understand it. I'm the one that wrote it. Anyway, after the meeting, so you can't. Everybody's going up to talk to the guy and kind of some shake his hand, some challenge him. So I walked up to him and I said, well, so you did thousands of iterations of this, like, so you're talking about Monte Carlo simulation, right?
Yeah.
And he looked at me and he says, well, what do you, so you knew that I knew what he's talking about. He goes, what do you do? And I said, same thing you do, but I'm not a broker. I'm a fee-based only advisor. I'm a CFA.
But I'm not a crook.
Yeah, but yeah. I said, I'm a CFA with a CPA background. So basically I was called. So then I said, but here's what I'd like to know. Because you'd mentioned you'd done all these different variables. And I said, how high does the, number one, if the, because the, their projection, Tim, yeah, was that real estate was going to go up 8% every year for the next 5 years, period. And then after that, they said it's kind of too far to, it's too hard to project out, so they would kind of keep it flat. But they're projecting 8% growth every year for 5 years. Well, hell, that's, you know, close to 100, you know, that's a lot. So anyway, so I went up there and I said, well, so at what point does a slowdown in real estate, how much does real estate have to pull back, 20%, 15%, 30%, until the numbers don't work and the bond payments get in trouble? That's the first question. Number two, how much does the interest rates have to rise by the Fed? If rates start to rise, where does that break? Or if we go into recession? He goes, well, I don't know. That'd be good to know. And I looked at him. I said, yeah, that's the whole point of Monte Carlo simulation. You want to put in variables to figure out. You're not worried so much about the upside, Tim. You want to know where it's going to break and where the downside. They didn't do any of those.
Oh.
It was all a rosy. It was a big cheerleading session to sell the bonds.
And so the people out there are on the other end of the microphone that are looking, you know, it's probably your parents or your loved ones that aren't as involved, that may not be as involved in the markets as you are, that are looking for the quote-unquote safer route to prosperity. And I'm just reminded that there's no free lunch. There's literally no there are no free lunches in this environment, and there won't be.
It's buyer beware. I hate to say it, but
and so you know, it's the same thing Danny was talking about real estate. You know, it's all about risk transference. So if you own equities, you have stock risk, you have company risk. Mm-hmm. If you have bonds, were you duped, or what if those bonds? Remember, you know, Tesla.
They default.
Yeah, Tesla's doing really well right now, but there was a period where the bonds. Remember that when Tesla was just sinking and those bonds were getting crushed, and people were told that they're the safe bonds. And
well, you remember Moody's and Fitch's after 2008 got in a whole big hot water over this because they were green stamping muni bonds and giving all these municipalities AAA rating, even though they didn't. Their financials look terrible.
And this isn't me coming out and going we're on the cusp of another crisis. This is just me saying that the people you love are looking for, they're going to outlive their money is what I'm trying to tell you here, that you need more equity exposure where the growth is, but Tim, what type of companies, where should we be looking at? And so look, we're not a shop that just buys and holds, but I'm going to transition this to what I really wanted to get to
before you do.
Go ahead.
Do you know the difference between a high yield bond and a junk bond, Tim?
Give it to me.
A high-yield bond is when the broker wants to sell it to you because it sounds good.
Yeah, yeah.
A junk bond is when you transfer in with it and he doesn't make any money unless he changes your investments. So it's a junk bond so he can make you sell it to buy what he wants you to buy. Yep. There is no difference. They're the same thing.
Yeah, and by the way, getting rid of onesies and twosies bonds like that is problematic.
That's a whole other topic.
It's a whole bit ask issue, and so there's better ways to do it. Listen, if you find yourself in this position or you know someone that's in this 60-40 issue, call us. 855-REAL-WEALTH. Talk to Danny is like a bond expert, and he can get you. There's other ways to do the route to less volatility, and I hesitate to use the word safe. I just don't have another word at the moment. Safer retirement. And we don't sell insurance. We don't do annuities. Those people, they should be stumped. And so
there's a place for life insurance.
It's called hell.
Not so much annuities.
Oh, I think you'd say there's a place for those people. It's hell.
No. For life insurance, sometimes you want to transfer the risk in case you die, but yeah. It's not an investment.
Right. Well,
there you go.
So many people are selling life insurance. Investment.
Right.
But I think that there are stocks out there. And look, I'm going to sound like a zealot here in a minute, or maybe a couple seconds I'll sound like a zealot. But I want to point out something. So I think people have heard me talk about Tesla in the past. You know, like just a whole bunch of nonsense. Well, someone got their books in order. Someone got them in order. I don't know who Elon Musk.
Well, that's a whole other controversy right there. But yeah.
But I don't know who Elon hired or whatnot. But like it seems like they've gotten their act together. And so, well, Tim, that's just a reflection of the stock price. Nothing's really changed. I don't know that. You don't know that. All we can do is look at the certified earnings that come out every quarter and make that judgment based on what we're seeing. But it appears that they might, after last quarter and what's been going on, it appears that they've gotten their act together. And you could say, well, is electric cars the future? Tim, you know, they run on coal. Look, I don't need that part of the argument right now. What I think they are, and I don't think can be denied, is that it's been transformative.
Oh, absolutely.
And like whether this is what we actually end up doing, electric cars in this country, or is this a bridge to some other technology, it doesn't matter. It's still been a great stock for the last 5 or 6 months or longer, right? Don, how long have you... Don had a brilliant trade. Don, when was your first entry into Tesla? I lost.
The first entry was a couple days after the initial gap up, so that would have been around the end of October.
Don's first entry. So spotting these high probability moment in times with lower risk, that's what our entries are, high probability moments in time with lower risk, and then just seeing how it turns out and then honoring your stop.
Yeah, it doesn't always work out.
If it doesn't work out. And so it clearly in Tesla's case has worked out. But what happens is when you start talking Tesla, you get both sides of the argument and you can't, because this is our show and no one's arguing back with this, like you don't have to entertain just nonsensically. You can say, well, how's the chart performing? And is it working? And then...
Well, sure. I mean, the argument is they're very, very aggressive with their accounting rules. That's fine. Maybe they are, maybe they aren't. The problem is, what is price telling you?
Yeah. And so...
And if that changes and price starts to go down, if you got to sell discipline, it doesn't matter.
I don't think there's any other company more scrutinized on their books and how they do business than Tesla. And if it was some hanky-panky going on there, it would be...
One of the most widely shorted stocks.
Yeah,
And the shorts are getting smoked right now.
Well, and so anyway, Tesla's doing just fine, but I think that you have another opportunity with Beyond Meat here. And so
BYND.
Yep, and we own Beyond Meat. So if you want to accuse me of talking my book, have at it. I don't care,
Well, we also talk about stocks we don't own.
Yeah, well, this isn't going to what I'm about to say about Beyond Meat isn't doesn't preclude me from selling our position in Beyond Meat.
Yeah, tomorrow or
yeah, or,
well, it's Friday, yeah, Monday.
Yeah, and so I just keep all that in mind. Just because what I'm going to say sounds super bullish about Beyond Meat, and I'm going to give you a really bullish case here, it doesn't mean it can't go the other way. It doesn't mean that we're not going to sell our position.
It means it looks good right now.
It looks good right now. And so, but here's what I find amazing about Beyond Meat. So I've read stories about how the beef industry is really upset with that they're allowed to be called
meat. Beef. Yeah.
No, no, they're meat, not called meat, beef. Meat. They're called meat. Yeah. And they're up in arms. And it makes sense that they would be up in arms. I want you to think about how lazy the industry has been, the beef industry has been. Or you could say the same thing with chicken, or you could say the same thing with pork. Like, you could say, well, there's beef, it's what's for dinner. Well, that's a brand against other meats. You could say pork, the other white meat, or I don't know. Does chicken have a saying? Like, chicken, we're not pork. Like, what is chicken?
We're not pork.
Like, I don't know what chicken's thing is. But the problem here is that there's no particular brand of beef. We'll just use beef here in this case, because the beef industry is really upset with, like, they're angry at Beyond Meat and Impossible Burger or Impossible Meat. And so there's no differentiation. Like, if you buy, now some of you will go, well, Tim, there are different classes of ground meat, there's different classes of steak. No, I get all of that. And look, I'm not of a trained palate that I could tell you Wagyu from other cuts. I'm not that good at it. I'm just eating, you know? Some of you are able to tell you that. I think people are being scammed every time they see a Wagyu burger on a menu, and it's not. Well, it's Wagyu from Oklahoma. And I'm like, wait, isn't that supposed to be from Japan? And anyway, so I think you're being scammed on all that kind of nonsense. And so...
Well, especially if you just don't know.
Yeah, and I'm of that ilk. And so... But what I do know is this, that there is no one in the beef industry that has been able to get you to buy XYZ beef brand. Because you can't tell the difference. Because you think, Danny gave me a slight eye there. And you could say, well, Tim, I buy Omaha steaks, or I buy Kansas City steaks, which is, they're two mail order brands. Mm-hmm. You couldn't line those steaks up, you know, cut for cut, and probably tell the difference if they were prepared the same way, if you're being honest. And so I want you to think about what Beyond and Impossible have done in 10 short years. I think Beyond Meat's been around since 2009. What they've been able to do in 10 short years, and what the beef industry hasn't done in ever. You can actually tell the difference between the two products. You can tell the difference between Impossible. You can tell the difference between Beyond. You're going to a restaurant, and you're not saying, I'll take the Omaha steak. You just go to the restaurant and say, I'll take a steak. You don't know what brand you're getting. But if you order a Beyond burger prepared, you know, a Beyond burger, no matter how it's prepared, no matter what it's put in, you can tell. And you're specifically went to that restaurant for their preparation of whatever Beyond Meat, be it sausage, chicken, or beef, air quotes, that you're eating. And you'll know if that's actually being served to you, because they have a distinct taste. And it's amazing. Think about that. Brand is everything. Okay? And someone might say, well, Tim, I don't know really what you mean by that. Brand is everything. Well, think about it. Like, how well did the Chevy Bolt do? How well has Ford's electric cars done? Name the number one electric car, and Volkswagen's trying, and they just can't do it. It's Tesla. When you think Tesla, when you think electric car, you automatically think Tesla. Brand, well, Tim, you know, Tesla, Nikola Tesla actually did. He got ahead of Edison in electric. I get that. So when you think of Tesla, you think of electric, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't think of Russian. I think of electric
car. Think of natural gas car.
I think electric car. You know, and so if brand matters here so much, and this is why the beef industry is so up in arms, because they don't have a brand. They don't have something to lean on that you're going out and you're specifically ordering or trying. Like, you know what the product is. When you go to a restaurant, you have no idea what brand they're serving you. It's, and so, like, Sysco, not the router company.
Yeah,
company. Yeah, the food distribution company. They're coming out with their own burger, their own plant-based burger, and they have all the distribution. There's a couple companies that have all the distribution. Yeah. One of them is Sysco. And it really didn't make a dent to Beyond. And the reason why is because brand is everything. Tyson, which had an investment in Beyond, and spun it off. that'll go down as what McDonald's did to Chipotle. They're going to come out with their own plant-based chicken. And you know what? there ain't no one going to go to the store. I mean, no, there ain't no one going to go to the restaurant and going, I need the Tyson plant-based. No, no, they're going to want Beyond. They're going to want Beyond's chicken offering. Brand is everything. And in a race to be first or a race to win over the hearts and minds of whatever the consumer. And look, if you don't eat this, I don't even eat this. Like, I just know.
Have you tried it yet?
No, I won't. I don't eat soy. And so I don't eat in that way. I joke with Tanya, like, I've become that person that's a pain in the ass to go out to eat with, like, because I don't eat a lot of things. And so
it's hard for you to go out to eat in a restaurant.
Not really. I make do just fine. I've just cut out 90% of soy. I've cut out I've cut out sugar. I've cut out I'm down like 60 pounds and I feel amazing. And so anyway, Reagan, though, my daughter, who, by the way, we started the show with listening to some Beatles. I don't know if Kenny's going to loop that in there, but Reagan loves Beatles. The Beatles.
Oh, yeah. They're awesome.
Well, I'll tell you what. We have a thing where we listen to the Beatles, and she likes to now sit in the front seat and play the Beatles channel on Sirius Satellite, or we just pull them up on the phone with a couple music apps that I have. And so all fun stuff. But Reagan isn't a vegan or a vegetarian. She just likes the taste. And so, I asked her, what do you prefer? And she doesn't mind. The biggest purveyor because of distribution is Morningstar with their legume type burger. It's a bean burger. And, but it's interesting that.
So does she.
Go ahead. I was going to say,
does she actually like it better than regular beef?
Yeah. That's her choice.
So she likes the plant-based beef better.
Yeah, and it's interesting to me that if she's given the choice between the Beyond Burger or, and I haven't, I just watch her. I'm not making her.
Try to put right.
No, and so they'll have a Morningstar Burger on the menu or they'll have a Beyond Burger and she's choosing the Beyond. And I want you to think, so Morningstar, in terms of these bean burgers, now anyone can have a bean burger, okay? But Morningstar is almost like Escalator. And so like Escalator was a brand name. It was a trademarked name, Escalator. But it became such a generic term like Kleenex that it loses its value and everything's a Kleenex, everything's an Escalator. Mm-hmm. Make me a Xerox. And so brand does lose power when it's used in a generic term. Morningstar, because they own this market, and they sell most of the bean burgers. Most people don't know the differentiation between a bean burger from Morningstar and a bean burger from Sysco makes their own, and a couple other distributors make their own as well, or the restaurant itself can make their own. But you know if you're not getting Beyond. And if a restaurant tries to slip you a Mickey and not give you what you... If you're
so... Placebo?
Yeah, like if you're... Yeah, it's a big deal. And so think about that. It's the same to me. It's the same parallel as an electric car is an electric car. No, it's not. Somehow Tesla's got this formulaic magic where it to the people that drive them, they say it's better than any other. It's better than any other electric car or other car.
Yeah.
And I think Beyond is really that same thing here. I think Beyond is. You can't buy impossible shares in the public markets. There's some private internet markets you can try to buy people's private Beyond shares from different investors. But let's not say that that's an actual avenue. If you want to own a piece of what people are buying into, you know, whether you think it's healthy or not, whether you think it's hogwash about the environment, whether you buy into that people just want a different way to ingest protein, they've got it. They've got this brand. And I think it's just starting. Now, the stock could fall apart, and it doesn't mean I'm going to hold it. Mm-hmm. It just means that I think in terms, if brand is everything, and I want you to think about this. When you search
for... They've just done a great job marketing and pushing the product.
Yeah, I don't really even know how much they've marketed. I know they advertise. I know they've gotten increased distribution. It's the users though. If it was awful,
it's got a good product too. Yeah.
Like to the people that enjoy that product and living that lifestyle, they love it. And so it's interesting to me. A lot of people made a big deal about Burger King. putting Impossible Whopper like on the value menu, and I don't see that, you know. Like, and there was an article in Bloomberg. Carrols is the largest franchisor of Burger King's, and Carrols said that, you know, they're not moving as fast as they used to. Well, it's been out now for a year. Like, you, not everything has this, you know, sales eventually peter off. But it was interesting. Like, to give you an example, like a lot of the things, and I don't know how many of these are selling on a day cumulatively in the Burger King system. You know, but a restaurant on average is moving somewhere between 25 and 30 of these normally, these Impossible Whoppers. Mm-hmm. But I don't know how many regular Whoppers they're moving. Like, I don't have anything to compare it to.
Right, right. Well, remember I told you, we talked about this a little bit a couple nights ago. A lot of it, I think, was the initial pop. People wanted to try. I mean, I just don't eat fast food that much.
Yeah.
But when I go by, I'm thinking about getting one next time just to try it. Just because the intrigue.
Curiosity.
And after you try it once, twice, you go, eh.
And
people go back to after they've tried it. So
yeah.
Some of those sales are not repeat customers. Some of that is curiosity.
So it's interesting with the Burger King. They put it on the 2 for $6 value menu. And it used to be $5.69 a piece. I think you'll get more adoption that they've actually brought it on par
with
all their other offerings, and I bet you sales actually increase. But I mean, which now you're doing volume, not just onesies and twosies. Anyway, the fact that the brand exists like this, and you're going to search it out like this, is amazing to me, because as people get more and more hooked on voice assistants, it, you know, and when you go to Google search, whether it's your phone or your mobile device, you're seeing who bought that placement. Like, Google's going to serve up what it deems relevant, so we can still have authenticity.
Right.
But as you don't search for things by hand, and you search more and more for voice, how much did someone pay to be at the top of the search rankings? Like, it'll be soon. You'll say, okay, Google, I need order me plant-based burgers, or order me Beyond. Like, you're going, if the brand isn't on top of mind as a consumer, like, hey, okay, Google, order me Crest toothpaste. Like, if you're not brand on people's minds, you're gone. And everyone in the middle. So, like,
well, you're a commodity.
Tyson can introduce plant-based chicken all they want, but if it's not desired by the people that matter, and the people that matter in this case are the consumers, and they're shopping brand, and they trust Beyond, and they trust Impossible, and Tyson's just some kind of generic form, it doesn't make a dent. And I don't think people get that, because I like to go on Twitter and see what the zeitgeist is of stocks, and I can tell you that people just they're it's like the Tesla TSLAQ crowd for stocks, where for the Tesla stock, where they just every day they try to find some reason to bash it down. I've joked around that Beyond is the Tesla of meat, and because it's just got this other side of the audience that is telling you it's overvalued, it's X, Y, and Z, and man, just watch the chart. I mean, it might be. At the end of the day, it might be, but I think more what I've picked up on here, and I'm a little late to. I mean, we've got a nice gain in it right now, but I mean that could be fleeting, you know. It's a pretty volatile stock, but the point being here is that brand is everything. And like, if you say, well, Tim, what's Revere's brand? Yeah, we're not going to 2008 you. That's our brand. If you told me, hey, Tim, describe Revere Asset in one succinct sentence, we won't 2008 you. Well, Tim, tell me what that means. That means we're not going to ride the stocks into the ground telling you it's all going to be great. No, we're going to tell you that you need to sell. And if you're down 5 or 10%, take a little bit of pain, because there's a great chance it's going to get worse. And by the way, you can't see the other side of the coin right now, but we can, because we've seen people do this, that the material effects mentally on your health and physical health are going to be so detrimental with the stress of how much money you can lose in one of these things that you're going to wish you sold now, and we can always get back in.
There's too many times it's easy to make money. You don't have to take risk when they're elevated. When it's really risky, you need to take some off the table.
And so that's our brand. And so what's Vanguard's brand? Buy and hold. that come hell or high water.
Cheap. Don't change anything.
Yeah. Cheap, buy and hold. And so those are two diametrically opposed. Well, not the cheap part, because we're really inexpensive for the service we provide. But in terms of they're a buy and hold shop, and we are, if you knew that the elevator was going to go all the way down to the bottom floor and not make any stops and crash and burn, why are you getting on it? You don't have to. You don't have to ride it all the way down. And so, yeah.
Well, I love Don's quote. Vanguard's away. Yeah. In a bear market, Vanguard's a way to lose a lot of money cheaper.
Yeah.
Cheaper.
And so, anyway, Don, any thoughts? And then I want to get Don. I haven't included Don too much in here. I apologize for that. Don, thoughts on any of that, the Tesla Q crowd, beyond? And then I want to know what you're looking for one of the biggest earnings weeks coming up next week.
Well, I'm long Tesla, obviously, and to be long Tesla, it means you're ignoring the naysayers. To be long this market, it means you're ignoring everybody that's been calling for a recession and then high PEs and everything. And price and volume are our primary drivers. And then we look at sentiment also. But until those change, it's a bull market, and you set your stops and you let the market take you out. As far as Beyond Meat goes, I think an interesting point, I'm putting that on the 2 for $6. People that would never try one now can get a Whopper and an Impossible since it's 2 for $6. And it probably opens it up to people who never would have tried one.
That's a good point.
Yeah, I think that's good. I'm sorry, Don.
But again, with Beyond, you know, the price action is what's going to dictate whether or not we stay in it, which is, you know, pretty much what you said, and it's our MO here at Revere. As far as the market goes, the 21-day exponential moving average has, I'm keeping a close eye on it. But also in the larger cap indexes, all pullbacks have been contained by the 8 EMA. So the first sign that there may be any kind of trouble would be a close below the 8 EMA, and then you focus on the 21. And then closes below the 21 would mean a big character change for the market because we've been trending above it for 3.5 months.
Yeah. And so someone's going to go, when are you going to talk about the coronavirus, Tim? Yeah. Well, listen, I don't think you can get sick from beer like that.
It'll show up on price.
Yeah. And so I'm not discounting it. I just, anything that we say about that, honestly, doesn't help you at this point.
Well, it goes along those lines. So yesterday, a because I thought, who is this? So I looked at the guy's profile. He's a portfolio manager. He manages people's money. And he made the comment, there's a correction coming soon in early February. I can just feel it in my bones. That's what he said.
The thing is, he may be right.
He may, yeah, but you got to
like
have
Billy
some
Joel
metrics.
Said,
yeah, yeah.
He may be crazy.
Yeah, he may be right.
He may be crazy. He might just be the lunatic you've been looking for. Did I get that right?
Yeah.
You did.
A couple other things. So on Beyond Meat, you were talking about Beyond Meat. The thing that I like about it the most, I don't care whether beef, I don't care if it's biotech, whatever it is, right? It IPO'd. It had this big, big, huge pop. Then it made that big, deep, deep bowl,
right.
This huge correction, stayed way down there, got crushed, and now it's coming up the right side of the bowl.
Right.
And with some of those leading stocks, go look at Facebook. Facebook did the same thing. There's lots of them that did the same thing. So I like it. Now, for me, I'm not a Beyond junkie. I'm going to eat my beef, but I'm going to own Beyond, at least for right now.
Right.
So I'm kind of like Don with that $2 for $6 where you can have the beef and you can try the Beyond. I'm just going to eat my meat, beef, real meat, and then I'm going to own the Beyond.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Yeah. It's just interesting that in a world where I think brand is everything. And I think that the two spectrums are going to always be around the high end of the spectrum and that low end of the spectrum. And I think everything in between is just going to go, it's going to fade to black. I'm not saying it won't exist at all, but yeah, I think that's what's going to happen. I mean, if you know, what's the old saying? If you stand for everything, you stand for nothing.
Right.
Look at the department stores. Like, look, and eventually the tide will turn where people are tired of, they want to. I don't think retail's dead. I think boring retail's dead. I think if you're not invigorated by going to the store and And it's not just being destination. It's like, are they actually purchasing things in these stores? There's a great article about Forever 21 in this week or last week's Bloomberg Business Week. If you want it, I'll send it to you. Just email me and I'll PDF it for you and send it to you. Tim@revereasset.com.
Have they declared yet?
They declared bankruptcy, yeah. And just the mismanagement around retail that's been, and I'm not saying every retailer's been managed this way, but
you've got
to
keep
it. It's sloppy. Yeah. I'm telling you, the article is illuminating to the sloppiness. And it's hard to get details about Forever 21 because they're not a public company. But when you file bankruptcy documents, those, in fact, do become public. And and I'll tell you what, too. There's a lot of small, medium-sized businesses that are going to hurt the more they do business with larger stores, larger companies that don't quite, I think, that are in the middle. Because that when these companies declare bankruptcy, like, it's not in a vacuum. All the suppliers are the ones getting hurt. And if you're not, if it was too much of a company's business, like, there's ramifications for these things. And And so it'll be interesting to see what happens here as the economy rolls on and there's more shakeout in the middle. I mean, Pier 1 just, I mean, I know we're kind of vacillating here, but Pier 1 said they're going to close a couple weeks ago, said they're going to close over 400 stores. And my first thought was, Christ, they have 400 stores? No, left. No. I just thought, why do they have 400 stores?
Well, you know, they had a whole round of closing 3 or 4 years ago.
No, well, they had just under 1,000 stores left. And I'm thinking, why? Like, I don't know. I don't want to bash Pier 1. What I'm saying is, what's in that store that's a differentiator that you can't get anywhere else? Like it, and so that's my point about brand. What does the brand Pier 1 represent? If you literally can't think of it, and the first thought in your head is generic brown decorations that you put in your house. Well, Christ, can't you get that anywhere? So yeah, I think it's special to have brand, and so I think we'll see how Tesla does. We've got a piece of Tesla in all the portfolios right now. We'll see how Beyond does. And I think brand matters. It doesn't mean the stock's going to continuously go up, but I do believe, in fact, brand matters. Don, what else you got, man?
Those key levels, I think, are the big thing to focus on. I'm also noticing some stocks getting just too extended and then having harsh pullbacks, and that could be a sign of some froth and you know, maybe it's time for the pullback. But again, we're going to make our decision based on the price action and not on what we're feeling.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see how Amazon reports next week, Facebook reports next week, Apple reports next week. Like,
it's a big week next
week.
Yeah,
and that fellow, I don't know who you're referencing, Danny, but the fellow that said, I can feel a pullback in my bones. Look, Don and I and Danny have had pretty intense discussions about, is this the 2018 market where it was a great January? The VIX couldn't get out of its way to go up. And then all of a sudden, it turns out everyone's shorting the VIX. And then the first little pullback.
Blip, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. They're racing to cover the VIX.
And spikes.
Turns out the VIX triggers algorithms.
Yeah, yes.
And the market's just heading much, much lower. Yep. And so, yeah, like, that's a real thing, folks. And so you want to be careful about that because it can happen. And just because I sound bullish on Beyond, or I sat, or Don, you know, in a video might sound bullish in on the markets, doesn't preclude us from selling.
Well, it doesn't mean it won't change.
Yeah, and so that's why we do those videos 5 nights a week. And so if you want to see the entries on Tesla, they want to see the entries on Beyond, want to see the entries on Peloton. By the way, Peloton is a brand. Like, all these other competitors are coming out with
copycats.
Oh yeah, and it'll be interesting to see if Peloton can withstand them. Yeti was able. I mean, there's everyone competes with Yeti now. Like, they don't own
a couple different brands. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, everybody, like, generic, like, yeah, like they used to have the entire market of high end cooler, of high end vacuum cup, of high end everything, and now they're, but it's brand, and so, but a brand loses its way when it lowers its standard, and so, you know, it'll be really interesting to see how it all shakes out. But we own Peloton, too, which is quite another brand story.
All right, folks. Listen, if you like what you heard, please tell a friend, tell a neighbor. Just tell them to go to revereasset.com and sign up for our daily market insight. You'll get a short market video that either Tim or Don will do. They'll also get a link to this podcast every weekend, and we promise you we're not going to spam them or reach out to them. It's up to the listener or the consumer to reach out to us if they want a complimentary portfolio review, or if you simply just have questions about a stock or a ETF or investing in general. You can always email us at dan@revereasset.com, Don at Revere Asset, or Tim at Revere Asset. You can also call us old school at 855-REO-WEALTH. We'll talk to you next week on Your Money.